From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, some believe the governor's creation of a new Women's Equality Party may contain an ulterior motive. Political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on the governor's new book, and a state senator has a plan to keep tolls affordable on the current and new Tappan Zee Bridge. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo has formed a new political party known as the Women's Equality Party, he says, to further the cause of women's rights. But others see the new party as having an ulterior motive. More from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Cuomo's formed a new political party called the Women's Equality Party, and he's organized bus tours and rallies, encouraging New Yorkers to vote for him on that line as an alternative to the Democratic Party slot.
That's what the Women's Equality Party is all about. The party is an organized way to express the political support from women and men for the concept that women should have the same rights as men.
The focus on women's issues, including a 10-point plan with an abortion rights provision, can aid Cuomo in bringing out women voters who support the incumbent governor in greater numbers than do men. It's also helped Cuomo draw attention to the fact that his main opponent, Republican candidate Rob Astorino, is pro-life, though Astorino has said he would not try to change the state's current laws, which legalized abortion back in 1970. But the creation of an alternative third party can serve another purpose for the governor. It could draw votes away from the Working Families Party, a left-leaning group that has at times had a strained relationship with the governor. Karen Scharf with Citizen Action is a key member of the Working Families Party leadership, also known as WFP. She said that women should not be pigeonholed into a separate party, and she says the newly created Women's Equality Party is about politics, not achieving actual policy.
Women's equality is a nice message for the campaign. The governor's using it that way. But from my point of view, what really matters is getting the bill passed. And a vote on the WFP ballot line is the way to elect a full slate of candidates as necessary to actually pass the Women's Equality Act.
Cuomo won the Working Families Party endorsement for his reelection bid, but only after he made a video recording under the direction of the party's leaders that named specific promises demanded by the group. They include working to shift control of the state Senate from Republicans to Democrats who will support the Women's Equality Act, among other things.
Together, we must go out and we must win a majority of the seats in the Senate.
Since then, Cuomo has had little to do with the group publicly. He recently skipped a Working Families Party rally in New York. Scharf points out that the Working Families Party is an actual political party with leadership posts, a decision-making structure, and an issues platform. The Women's Equality Party so far has none of those things.
Women's equality at this point is just a line on the ballot. In order to become a party, they have to meet all the other criteria at some point.
And the line on the ballot could be one of the most important aspects of the Women's Equality Party. It will be identified as WEP on the candidate slate, which is just one letter away from WFP, which is how the Working Families Party line will appear on the ballot. The confusion could siphon even more voters away from working families. Fewer votes in November has major consequences for minor parties. A party has to get at least 50,000 votes in a statewide election year in order to be automatically included on the ballot. If they don't reach that threshold, then the party has to go through the painstaking process of collecting thousands of individual signatures in order to qualify. Scharf would not say whether there are tensions between Cuomo and the Working Families Party, but she says both the governor and her group are focused on getting more Democrats elected to the state Senate. She discounts recent polls that show Republicans ahead in five key races.
I don't take polls 4 weeks before Election Day very seriously. There's been example after example of polls being completely wrong.
Scharf says there's cause for optimism. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, have you ever looked at your cell phone and found that you had accidentally made a call for a period of time?
It's one of the funniest stories that we have had all year. Ken Lovett, our friend from the Daily News, who has been on this program and other programs that we do many times, he's generally regarded as the best political reporter and commentator in Albany. One of the guys, Josh Vlasto, of the Cuomo administration, who inadvertently takes his call but doesn't know he's taken it. So there is Ken Lovett in the middle of this gubernatorial discussion in which they're talking about all kinds of things, and Lovett is writing it all down. Well, of course, once they discover he's got it, they accuse him of illegally tapping their phone and taking down material, and they answered the phone. He answered the phone. The guys at New York State, by the way, has a law. Massachusetts is very different. New York State, one person on an end of a phone is allowed to record if they want to. Massachusetts, both parties have to agree. And Maryland, too. You may remember there was a Clintonian figure in the great Clintonian sex scandals who did record and who was, I believe, prosecuted. But this is a very funny story. And, of course, the Cuomo people came after Ken Lovett, who was a very decent fellow and fun. And, you know, he stood his ground, and, of course, he won. But this week, Cuomo has been talking about his book, his new book, and saying that in the old days he used to be arrogant, but he's not anymore. And then he goes back to his marriage and all the other stuff. But he's not talking to a lot of people because the general defensive posture in an election is you don't go out there and start taking risks when you don't have to, when you're 20-something points ahead in an election. But there are those people who think that the claim of arrogance in the past may be premature, especially when you stand up explaining that you have stopped the Moreland Act Commission from doing its work. And when pressed on that, you say, well, it's my commission. I can do anything I want with it.
Also, as part of the book, All Things Possible, some questions being asked by interviewers, including the New York Times Magazine, Amy Chozick, who asked him this question, Alan, and I'll share his response with you. You write a lot about media, starting with your first experience in Albany working for your father, Mario, when he was governor. Back then, reporters called you the Prince of Darkness. And the governor's response? New York has a reputation for really tenacious, no-hold-barred reporters. We have a tenacious press corps, and it's much more rough and tumble than politics in many other states.
Well, yeah, look, of all of the practitioners of practical politics, and I've said it again and again, both admiringly and not so admiringly, Andrew Cuomo is at the top of the group. I mean, he is one tough guy, and people are scared of him. So when you hear the Prince of Darkness, that's the reporters talking about it. Look, you know, he has a fight going on with the New York Times right now, which is extraordinary. And there are places not to go. In the end, you cannot win a fight with the New York Times. I don't care how powerful you are. It's just not a smart way to go. And the Times, for its part, has been magnificent in terms of having the courage to call Cuomo out and everybody else that they think needs to be watched. So he's mad at them. He gave them an interview because he had to give them an interview. But I don't know that he did himself that much good. You know, one of the things he said recently around his book was that he wasn't sure that the fact that his father was the governor and had gave him the Cuomo name was the best thing in the world for him politically. I thought that this was more representative of chutzpah, unbelievable gall, than anything I've ever seen. Look, let's face it. He's the governor now because his name is Cuomo. Let's face it. He becomes a cabinet secretary at HUD because his name is Cuomo and because clearly there was an attempt to keep the Clintons and Cuomo's happy with each other. So to say that he's not sure it's a great benefit to have had the Cuomo name, are you kidding?
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Thanks, Al.
You're welcome, David.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A state senator from the Hudson Valley has unveiled a plan to keep tolls affordable on the current Tappan Zee Bridge and its replacement. The current toll is $5 cash. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
State Senator David Carlucci is an independent Democrat whose district includes the Rockland County side of the Tappan Zee Bridge.
We have one of the nation's largest infrastructure projects being built right behind us, right in the Hudson Valley. And we can have a beautiful, shiny bridge, but if we can't afford to cross it, it'll be devastating to our economy here in the Hudson Valley.
He stood on the banks of the Hudson River Tuesday in Nyack with the bridge that connects Rockland and Westchester counties in the background to lay out a four-point plan he says needs to be addressed to lay the foundation to mitigate any toll increases on both the current bridge and the replacement bridge now under construction. The first is to tackle toll evasion.
The governor has proposed that before in last year's budget. Unfortunately, it fell off the table. What we've done now is really recalibrated it to make it simple. Just make that simple change. Allow the Thruway Authority to work with the DMV. When there is a chronic toll evader, allow them to suspend someone's vehicle registration. And we're not talking about someone that's gone through an easy pass by accident once, twice, or three times. We're talking about a chronic toll evader where thousands of dollars of unpaid tolls have accumulated.
He says the Tappan Zee loses about $5,000 a day from toll evaders. The second point of his plan is to establish a toll tax credit to serve as a personal income tax credit for Rockland and Westchester residents, amounting to $250 for single filers and $500 for those filing jointly. Carlucci lays out points 3 and 4.
We need a resident discount for Rockland and Westchester residents. Right now, the residents of Staten Island have a resident discount for the Verrazano Bridge for the same reason that we should have it here in Rockland and Westchester. If people have to think twice about paying a toll to come over to Rockland or to Westchester, that could really devastate our economies. And the last point that is extremely important is that we get real about all the different authorities here in New York State. We should merge the New York State Thruway Authority with the Bridge Authority.
Governor Andrew Cuomo, October 6th, welcomed one of the world's largest floating cranes to assist in the construction of the replacement Tappan Zee, known as the new New York Bridge. Within a few hours of the welcoming, Republican Westchester County Executive and gubernatorial candidate Rob Astorino and Rockland County Executive Ed Day called on Cuomo to disclose project financing details and how much the toll will be, alleging rates will double or triple to finance the bridge. Cuomo said commuters should have to pay as little as possible, adding that he is not withholding the toll rates until after the November election because the information needed to determine a toll structure, such as the bridge's actual cost and financing details, will not be available for at least several months. Carlucci backs Cuomo.
So it would be premature to talk about what the toll is going to be when we don't have all the numbers together. But that's why we need to make it a priority. We need to figure out what those tolls will be to start letting people know. But I'm going to fight tooth and nail any toll increase at all.
Nyack Mayor Jen White has an idea to help transit among the river villages.
I would love to see a ferry seriously explored because we're looking at a bridge, a 100-year bridge, with the infrastructure for a train but no plan for a train. The infrastructure for BRT, which sort of works Port Chester to Suffern, but for those in the river villages, I think a ferry is the perfect answer. I don't know where you would put it.
BRT stands for Bus Rapid Transit.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
In the race for New York State Comptroller, Democrat Thomas DiNapoli faced off against Republican challenger Bob Antonacci this week in their only debate of the campaign. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard was there and filed this report.
In an hour-long debate at Baruch College that aired on TWC News, DiNapoli, New York comptroller since 2007, faced Onondaga County comptroller Bob Antonacci. DiNapoli, who replaced the disgraced comptroller Alan Hevesy, had the closest statewide race in 2010, when he survived a challenge by Harry Wilson. Now, DiNapoli is defending his role as the primary trustee of the state's pension fund and touted its positive ratings.
And I think the strength has been broad diversification, having a professional investment staff, working with advisors and consultants who are very skilled. And I think the numbers speak for themselves. We're the best funded of all the big state plans, one of the best funded in the country. We have a great track record, and that comes with a lot of hard work and a lot of professional attention.
Antonacci said the pension fund relies too heavily on taxpayer contributions.
And until we have real talk about a defined contribution plan, we're going to continue to see the tax spikes that we see. In Onondaga County alone, where we have one of the highest bond ratings in the state, we just passed the budget unanimously with no tax increase. We've had over $20 million taken from our county for the pension contribution.
DiNapoli said moving to defined contributions would be too risky for retirees. The candidates also discussed public campaign financing reform. As outlined in this year's budget, a pilot public financing program was limited to the comptroller's race. DiNapoli, who says he supports broad public campaign financing, opted out of the program. At the debate, Antonacci admitted his support for public campaign financing in the comptroller's race could put him at odds with his fellow Republicans. Antonacci has not yet raised enough money to kick in the 6-to-1 public campaign financing matching funds.
The Republican Party is generally not a fan of public financing, neither is the Conservative Party, and my constituency has made that clear. But this campaign is tough to fund anyway. When you say expansion, I think that's a topic for another day, but certainly the comptroller's office, the fact that you're the sole trustee of the pension plan, if there's any office that lends itself to public financing, it's the comptroller's office.
DiNapoli called the plan a very flawed system.
Whether it was set up intentionally to fail or not, certainly it was clear it was going to fail. That this should not be an excuse for us to retreat from comprehensive campaign finance reform, lower limits, and public financing for state legislative races and all the statewide offices.
On the issue of public corruption in the legislature, Antonacci accused DiNapoli of not being aggressive enough during his term as a legislator or comptroller in stopping wrongdoing.
It's very easy to go in and see money that is stolen after the fact. It's how do you set up internal control apparatuses so the money is not stolen in the first place.
DiNapoli stood by his record, mentioning the indictment of two lawmakers for abusing per diems.
The message is clear. There are rules. We could argue whether the rules should be tighter or not, but if you break those rules, we're going to find out, we're going to work with prosecutors, and you're going to be indicted.
Antonacci criticized the comptroller for not objecting to a comprehensive settlement authorized by Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver with Democratic Assemblyman Vito Lopez, who was accused of sexually harassing two female staff members.
That Vito Lopez scandal was poorly handled. He could have stopped the settlement. We're still paying for that scandal right now. We're still cutting checks to those attorneys. And in fact, Mr. Lopez may not even have enough money to pay the settlement to the victims. And New York State is going to have to do it, pay that settlement, even more money.
A controller cannot pick and choose on a valid payment that's submitted by a state agency. That's a very dangerous notion that the controller is going to sit there and make judgments when there's the money there and it's legal. We are not the office to make policy choices or to make these kinds of legal determinations.
The two also offered different opinions on public investment in hydrofracking, with Antonacci calling New York shale gas deposits a gold mine. DiNapoli said he would not invest in a practice that could have negative effects on human health. Fracking has been on hold in New York under a de facto moratorium while the state considers health and environmental impacts. The two both asserted their own independence from Governor Andrew Cuomo, though DiNapoli did opine that Cuomo would be the best governor for New York. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gastina. During its October monthly meeting, the Adirondack Park Agency Board agreed to begin a public process to consider changes to the Adirondack Park State Land Master Plan. Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was there and filed this report.
The State Land Master Plan is the document upon which the Adirondack Park Agency bases classification and management of the lands within the park. The agency is in the process of classifying land recently acquired by the state. During the October meeting, Board Chair Lonnie Ulrich explained that as part of the Essex Chain of Lakes classification resolution, the APA committed to consider changes to allow all-terrain bicycles and to allow non-natural materials use on a Cedar River bridge.
Both of those commitments will require amendments to the State Land Master Plan. We know there may be other topics of interest that may be presented during these sessions, and we will review and discuss all of that input as a part of a public process that will be rolling out in the upcoming year.
Adirondack Mountain Club Executive Director Neil Woodworth notes that the agency could do an area-specific change or could make changes to the entire plan. He cautions that the agency is not beginning a State Environmental Quality Review Act process that would lead to comprehensive changes.
They're very careful to characterize these as listening sessions for the two issues, and the public will be allowed to comment on other amendments that they might like to see. But these will not lead to a formal amendment process. The way it's been explained to me by the agency, these are a way for the agency to find out what issues might be out there and see whether consensus can be reached on some of those issues.
Adirondack Council spokesman John Sheehan says the park agency must move forward with a formal classification for the Essex Chain, and the only way to accomplish that is to slightly modify the management plan.
The APA can't make changes to the State Land Master Plan without asking for public comment. So while it can define what scope it would like to take a look at in terms of what issues it wants to open up, the public is certainly free to talk about any part of the State Land Master Plan if the agency intends to amend it.
It has been over 25 years since the Adirondack Park State Land Master Plan was amended, and a review is supposed to occur every 5 years, according to Protect the Adirondacks Executive Director Peter Bauer.
It seems the agency is being very deliberate, and once they collect what the concerns are of the public, then the agency will determine what issues they will move ahead with in a public process to change the State Land Master Plan. One of the reasons that the State Land Master Plan has been able to go 25 years without a serious policy revision is that it's really one of the strongest documents for comprehensive natural resource planning for public lands in the country.
Four listening sessions are being planned in Raybrook, Old Forge, Warrensburg, and Albany prior to Thanksgiving. Written comments will also be accepted.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1442. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at the same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.